It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Medow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. It's all presented by Andrew Mark. Good morning, everybody. And back by popular demand, at GiantsWFAN on Twitter, live and in color. I saw him tweeting during the Pro Bowl last night.
When is he never tweeting?
Very excited, and I am going to enjoy being the referee between Paul Dottino and Lance Medow this morning. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, guys. I needed my Giants fix, and happy to say that Victor Cruz set a Pro Bowl record with 10 catches yesterday, 96 yards, and a touchdown, and a little salsa in the end zone. JPP, sensational pick.
He's
guarding J.J. Watt.
Defensive tackle. Let's not get too excited.
Love the pick. He was playing corner. Look, Corey Webster better be shaking in his boots because obviously JPP could do the job. And Eli looked good. Dude, it was great. It was great.
I did not watch a second of it.
I enjoyed every second of it. I really did. Chris Snead played left guard to start the game. And then after the first possession, went back over to his right guard spot. So that was rather interesting. And I actually thought it was a very entertaining game, the most fun Pro Bowl I've watched in many years, and I really hope they keep it.
Now let me ask you this. Did you think it was a great Pro Bowl because it was actually a great game, or you were just so desperate for some Giants football that you thought it was such a great game?
Both.
Both. Did you chart how many times the NFC rushed four guys versus five guys?
I did not go into my.
You didn't bring out the legal pad.
I did not go into my coach's notes. I did not do that. I was rather primitive.
I'm a little bit disappointed to hear about that.
Rather primitive. Well, you know why? There's no blitzing.
Well, but still, you could still find ways to be creative here.
Yeah,
you
know, I could. I mean, I could.
Come on.
I could.
Don't sell yourself short.
But there's no blitzing in the game, and so really to chart those kinds of things don't make much sense.
Well,
but I had a great time.
You
know what, though? Cruz did have a drop, which unofficially would be his 12th drop of the season. He had 11 during the regular season.
He's going to have to work on that in the offseason now. Yes. You can't have Pro Bowl drops on this level.
Unacceptable.
I wasn't happy.
201-939-4513. Now, we are going to take calls with you all morning long. If you want to talk about the Pro Bowl, that's cool. If you want to talk about general things the Giants need to do in the offseason to make sure their players aren't playing in the Pro Bowl next season, we will take those calls as well. Of course, I mean not playing in the Pro Bowl because they'll be getting ready for the Super Bowl at MetLife Stadium, not necessarily because they're not good enough to make it into the Pro Bowl. So, 201-939-4513. Let's go to Matthew down in Myrtle Beach. Matthew, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
How you guys doing?
Doing well, Matt. What you got?
Well, I just want to talk about the Pro Bowl and just say, you know, I was excited, you know, to get my G-men fixed on. But Eli, I love Eli. He's my favorite quarterback of all time. And it's the Pro Bowl, I know. But, you know, he threw another costly interception. And it's not, you know, if he was throwing it way downfield towards someone, you know, that's fine. But it's just sometimes he throws interceptions that are just like, really? You know, and I love him. It's just, I know you didn't see it, John, but if anyone else was watching, you know, he threw the interception, no big deal. I mean, it turned into a pick six, but, you know, it's the Pro Bowl. But besides that, I thought it was a great game. Eli threw a few passes to Rudolph, you know, the tight end from the Vikings, and they were unreal passes. And I love Martellus Bennett. I love the black unicorn, but we might need to sign this Vikings guy because, I mean, Eli, if he had that weapon, he kind of seemed unstoppable. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
Paul, you're all into the Pro Bowl. Break down Eli Manning's performance for us.
First of all, the interception, Rudolph was defended with bracket coverage. Manning did not see the linebacker underneath. Johnson from the Chiefs. Rudolph broke the route to the outside. I don't think Eli was expecting it. It looked like they had a miscommunication, and Eli threw the ball right into Johnson's chest, and then he ran it back for a pick six. I think that's more or less because the two guys don't play together, rather than Eli necessarily making a bad play.
I agree, but there was at least three people around that guy.
There's
was
no
like
question.
To,
no question there was some traffic there. I'm not going to tell you there wasn't. But you know what? Eli came right back and turned out, 16 to 23 for a $1.91 and two touchdowns.
And I knew he was.
And he looked great after that. He was sharp as a razor after that. As far as Kyle Rudolph, you know, he stole Victor Cruz's MVP. Let's face it.
He did, man. He really did.
You know, he catch five passes, and mostly from Eli, I might add, you know, which was kind of disappointing that Eli, wound up helping Kyle Rudolph get the MVP. Five for like $1.20 and a touchdown, I think. But I definitely would have given it to Victor Cruz. After all, he set a record with the 10 catches. So I think Patterson, New Jersey needs to be angry. They were jobbed.
They were, but I mean, I got to give it up to the Vikings guy because I've never even heard of him. You know, I know
Kyle Rudolph from Notre Dame. You've never heard of him?
No, I never heard of him. I mean, all I've heard about tight ends this year is, you know, the regulars, Gronkowski, Gonzalez. You know, it's his last year, so all I've heard about is Gonzalez. But I haven't heard of this Vikings player.
Rudolph, a very productive player. I think he was second among NFL tight ends in receptions this year. He is a very productive player. He's good.
I don't doubt it. Fantasy next year, I'm going for that guy. But my whole thing is Martell Bennett is great. But in the draft, let's look for someone like this Rudolph guy. I mean, with a weapon like that, I mean, you saw the production. I mean, it speaks for itself.
All right, Matt. Appreciate the call, man. Well, Paul, that brings us to a larger question. I'll jump back to the Pro Bowl in just a second. But where do you think the Giants stay with Martellus Bennett here? How interested, how much of a priority is it for them, do you think, to bring Bennett back? Or will the Giants allow him to test the market and figure out how much he's going to get elsewhere?
We talked the other day, John, about what kind of year Martellus Bennett had. And yep. I said BB- is what I would give him. I thought he was a solid inline blocker. Not a great blocker downfield, though. Didn't get to the second level very often, which you'd like to see more out of your tight end. The other thing was he had like seven drops this year, which for catching roughly 50 passes, the percentage is a little high for me. You'd like that to be a little bit lower. On the plus side, he certainly made some important catches, got into the end zone often enough, I think six touchdown catches, and he played hurt for at least half the season. And that's a positive. He never complained or begged out of a game. So there are clearly arguments on both sides in terms of when you want to re-sign this guy, how much you want to give him, and how long you want to give him. I'd probably give him a modest 2 or 3 year offer. I don't think I would necessarily break the bank to chase him economically. If somebody wanted to give him Fort Knox, by all means, let them do it. But I would think the Giants would be better off having him here as opposed to somewhere else.
I agree. I mean, I think Martellus Bennett was productive when he was healthy. That's the key. You know, it's hard to put much stock in this season to Paul because that hyperextended knee, even though he did come back and his production increased after he got over the injury, we still don't know whether or not he was truly even near 100%.
Oh, he wasn't.
So, therefore, you'd like to see what Martellus Bennett can do through a 16-game stretch when he is fully 100%.
But blocking is also a state of mind and effort, which he did not always show, especially through plays. And then you also have to understand there were a lot of times he did not run the right routes either, which is something that not every fan can see in the stands, but, you know, those of us who are around know.
And Tom Coughlin, in his end-of-season interview with WFAN, highlighted the fact that the blocking needs to improve. He wasn't even talking about Martellus Bennett's offensive production. First thing that came to mind with respect to Coughlin was he needs to become a better, more consistent blocker.
Well, that's because, again, when I say to you second level, we're talking about off the line of scrimmage. How many times did he drive a guy three or four yards backwards? Martellus Bennett can engage guys. He can hold guys up, he can engage guys, he can lock guys, he can seal the edge. He does those things very well. But now, how about a little more drive blocking? I think that's what Tom's talking about.
Well, plus, the other thing to keep in mind is the fact that, you know, this is probably the first season where he saw one or two extra guys on him. You know, when he's backing up Jason Witten, you don't get nearly as much attention as you would get when you're the starting tight end for the New York Giants.
Well, he no doubt played multiple more plays and snaps this year than he'd ever played in his career before either.
And wonder if fatigue maybe had something to do with it too.
Could have, John. So, I mean, you know, did he have a good season? Yes. Do you think he could be better? I certainly do. Maybe you guys do. Maybe you don't. I don't know. But, you know, would the Giants be better off bringing him back? Sure.
Here's a question for you. How close do you think Adrian Robinson is to contributing next year? Maybe not necessarily as a starter, but on some level as a part-time tight end.
You know what makes that such a hard question for me, John, is that the personnel department loves this kid. Jerry Reese, obviously, and the scouts thought very, very highly of him when they brought him here. Didn't Jerry himself or Mark Ross say, I think it was Jerry.
Jerry
said,
called him the JPP at tight end, which is insane, in terms of
his athletic ability.
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Now, that stuff may be true. I don't know, because I'm going to tell you flat out, outside of what we've seen at camp and in practice, I don't know anything about Adrian Robinson in college.
No.
Nothing. Never even saw highlights of him in college. Okay? So whatever they saw to make them feel that way, I'm sure there's some evidence there. But based on what I saw in camp and in practice last year, I would not put too much stock in giving him a ton of reps.
Yeah, we know
season.
He's an athlete, but is he a football player? And that's what I think the Giants
Travis
need
Beckham
to figure out.
Travis Beckham is an athlete, too.
Exactly. Okay. And they need to figure out this offseason in the OTAs and the minicamps exactly how far along he is, because really the Giants tight end position right now is at zero. Well, I should say about at a .5, because you have Adrian Robinson and you have nobody else. Everyone else is out there. They're free agents. So the Giants have to make some big decisions this year from that tight end position.
Yeah, because, you know, well, actually, no. They do have the one other tight end, and I'm losing him for a second.
Oh, Donald.
Yes, Donald. Yeah. Larry Donald?
Larry Donald, I think, yes.
Yeah,
correct.
He is a practice squad tight end he's a big frame, bulky guy. I think they look at him as more of a blocker. My understanding was he actually practiced very well last year with the scout team, and they really like what he's done. Now, you're going to have to tell me, John, because I don't know the answer to this one. You know, off season, some guys hang around a lot, some guys don't. I don't know if any of these tight ends have been around or if they're doing any work at all, but that would also be an indication as to what their future might be.
201-939-4513. Back to our phone. Say hello to Russ down in North Carolina. Russ, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Russ, what's up?
Okay, Giants defense. as far as, like, the run defense, I've been watching these games, you know, and I have an actual – TV where I can replay the plays and stuff, and I'm watching that. You know, most of the time when Perry Fail, he blitzes more than he does anything else, and they're complaining about the players missing all these tackles on these run plays. Well, a lot of these players, when I'm watching it, they're out of position where they're diving to make the catch, you know, the tackle, or they're grabbing hold of the shoulders and they're missing the tackles. But I've seen that. Most of the time, a lot of the times, these people are out of the position because they're more concentrating on the blitz.
You know, Russ, honestly, a big complaint we get is that Perryfield doesn't bring enough pressure and that he relies too much on that front four to get to the quarterback or stop the run for that matter. And I think, quite frankly, if you're seeing linebackers out of position with the inability to make tackles, I think you got to point the linebackers in that spot, not necessarily the defensive coordinator. You know what I mean?
Well... Yeah, but when you're watching the games there, when a guy actually makes a break into the secondary, I mean, them guys they're making, like, grab tackles, more like dive tackles than actually hitting them head on. You don't see any of them missing. I watched all the films myself here, and I'm watching that they're not missing any head-on hitting, you know, like tackles and grabbing. They're actually, like, if they watch the films, they're, like, more like side tackling and they're missing the tackle.
Oh no, Russ, I hear you, but part of making a good tackle as a defensive player is putting yourself in the position where you're not diving or grabbing for somebody. You're reading the play, you're getting yourself in position so you can square your shoulders and make a play. And that's part of being a good linebacker.
Right, but I seen that they were making the line kind of like thin, like they were concentrating more on they were saying about, you know, like blitzing and things like that. I was watching how they were blitzing. They were blitzing it, and they were pinching the ends inside. That's why they were getting all these runs on the outside all the time, because I seen how they were slanting and running toward the quarterback, you know, on a slant. And them ends were being pinched in. You know, most of the time, that's how them guys were running outside all day on them people.
Well, then that's another example that if your ends are not in position to make tackles, you need your linebackers and your secondary players to help the cause.
And trust me, these coaches are teaching these defensive ends to contain out there. If JPP or Otsi are making those inside moves to get to the quarterback, that's on them. That's not on the defensive coordinator telling them not to protect their rush lane outside.
Right. So, I mean, So are they saying, you know, it's not really the defensive coordinator that's a problem with this run defense?
I think it's the players making fundamental mistakes in their run defense. Correct.
Wow. Okay.
All right, Russ. Appreciate the call.
All right, thank you for your time.
Great.
All right, Russ.
Paul was very quiet during that phone call.
He's busy on Twitter.
I know. What are you doing over there?
This guy tweets. I mean, like he eats a meal. He got a tweet.
What are you playing solitaire on your phone?
No, just that I'm listening to this and I'm thinking to myself, for a guy who says he watches a lot of film, he sure came up with a rather offhanded comment to say that the Giants, blitz too much. He couldn't be more wrong. The bottom line was Perry Fuel was more passive than anything with his blitz for most of the season, because he was very concerned about his back seven.
Right.
No Jaquan Williams. Kenny Phillips was out for some of the time. Then he came back, and he wasn't right. Corey Webster was hurt for some of the season. Prince Amukamara was hurt for some of the season. Jaron Hosley, a rookie, had to play some at corner. I mean,
and he was also hurt, too.
Yeah. Hosley. There were reasons why Perry was very passive with his blitz for most of the year. And here's a guy who's trying to tell us that he watches a lot of film. If you watched a lot of film, you wouldn't have come up with that question. I'm just sitting here puzzled. That's all.
Well, I think his point, though, his larger point is sound. And I think his reasoning behind it is incorrect, in that linemen and linebackers are often out of position to make plays against the run. That, I think, is accurate. And if you look at this Giants defense, in my opinion, all of their problems get back to their inability to stop the run. If you can't stop the run, you're never in third and long. And if you're not in third and long, you can't take advantage of your pass pressure. And therefore, your secondary gets exposed. And I think that inability to stop the run, especially at the linebacker level, in my opinion, really was the Achilles heel of this defense that started their downfall from the beginning of the season.
Well, they missed Jaquan Williams big time.
Now, he's not a run stopper, though.
But he's a big part of what they wanted to do. And Michael Boley, who had a really good first third of the season, faded off. That was very disappointing. I'm sure the Giants feel that way about that. To be honest with you, Mathias Kiwanuka wound up playing at the end of the stretch, wound up playing a lot of line. You know, and he was supposed to be the strong side back. And I happen to like him better on the line, quite frankly, than I do at linebacker anyway.
And I think that's where he'll be next year, primarily.
I suspect as much, with OC in all likelihood being gone.
Right.
They got to figure out what they want to do with that strong side linebacker spot, because I think that Jaquan Williams is going to start at one spot. Now, whether or not Michael Boley is going to be back or redoes his deal or is a salary cap deal, we don't know what the situation is with him. I think he's on a little bit of a shaky ground right now because he ended this season very poorly.
Now, Paul, they've been able to hide this linebacker position a bit the last couple of years because of their great defensive line and the high level which these guys were playing.
Yeah.
Now, last season, the level of play at the defensive line position tailed off a little bit.
And
I think the linebackers got a little bit exposed. So
no doubt.
What's the answer now? Do you bring in a big play linebacker or do you try to reinforce that defensive line?
Yeah, you know what? I'd be more inclined to see if I could get a linebacker, because you could move Kiwi to the line. That should kind of help the line out a little bit.
I agree.
I'd look more to the middle part of that D. But, you know, I've been telling people all offseason in my Twitter that the first priority, if you're going to go with priorities, has to be offensive tackle. The Giants need a stud to play offensive tackle. Will Beattie's a free agent. I expect him to be re-signed at the left tackle spot. But you need a moose at the right tackle spot. Somebody who's going to bludgeon people as the Giants try to run that ball.
So someone in the mold of Lance Meadow.
Absolutely. I mean, I fit the mold, without a doubt. They don't have to look too far to fill that void, clearly.
But in all seriousness, would you be surprised if Jerry Reese came out of the first round of the draft in April with a defensive end? Considering how heavy the draft is with defensive linemen and defensive tackles, for that matter, it would not surprise me, considering his drafting history, if the Giants walk out of that first day of the draft with a defensive lineman. And I know it wouldn't surprise you either, because you're scratching your head, and it looks like I can see your blood pressure rising as we speak.
What is Jerry's favorite phrase? Never say never. And really, that says it all. Never say never.
Is that his favorite phrase? I don't think I've ever heard him say that.
I thought you were going to say best player available.
Yeah.
That's what I thought you were reaching for.
Never say never is even more of a favorite phrase of his. I've heard him say it many hundreds of times. And the truth of the matter is the Giants will go by their system, which says that they look at their number 19 pick and they will have a cluster of four, five, as many as six players who they believe are going to be in that cluster. And when they get to that point, they will then, as a room, discuss the cluster and come up with the best value of those picks. And that's who it's going to be. And you know what? If it turns out to be a defensive end, then that's who they're going to pick, regardless of who else is on this roster.
See, I thought Jerry Reese's favorite thing to say was, Paul Dottino again? Leave me alone. That's what I thought his favorite expression was, no?
Oh, thank goodness for all you guys. I'm not around a lot during the offseason. That's all I've got to say.
Jerry Reese is not complaining either.
That's actually a pretty good line. We haven't heard from David Rochester yet.
No, we haven't. He's
been requesting
for
about a better part of 2 weeks.
It's good to know you have at least one fan.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it is good to know. At least somebody out there.
Some support.
Because I've been trying to get the scientists to clone me, and I can't make it happen because I need to be in so many places at once.
Well, we've pulled the funding on that project a while ago.
I can tell.
Well, every scientist went to say, well, look, I'm trying to do things to help humanity out. Why would I want to make more than one of this
guy? Right. Yeah. The world is not ready for more than one of me.
No, I don't know about that.
Now, here's a question. With this recent cold snap, have you cut your power walk short, or are you still walking around?
I did 5 miles yesterday.
Really?
I sure did.
But it was cold.
No, it was like Miami Beach. It was like 25.
Miami Beach.
No, are you kidding me? They can keep New Orleans. I don't give a hoot about that place.
I was going to ask you about that. I know New Orleans is one of your favorite places in the country, and now you don't get to
I'd much rather cover the Pro Bowl in Hawaii than the Super Bowl in New Orleans.
Thanks. I think everyone will say that. But you are not a big fan of New Orleans, the city, are
you? Not particularly, no. But I will say I did cut back the other day. It was at 13 degrees out. I was only 2 miles.
Okay.
But I did 5 yesterday. It's snowing right now.
Oh, is it really?
Outside the Timex, it's snowing. So I don't know how many I'm going to do today. Maybe only 2. But I got to do some.
I don't understand.
Got to.
I want to go back to the Pro Bowl for a second. So
yes.
Not only does Eli Manning need to cut back on these Pro Bowl interceptions, clearly they've been hampering him his entire career, according to that first call, number one. But number two, you're very upset that you think Eli sabotaged Victor Cruz's MVP performance by targeting Kyle Rudolph.
Well, Kyle Rudolph...
This is a conspiracy.
...made a few nice grabs. Eli just threaded some beautiful passes to him, and I get that, but I'm thinking to myself, every time Kyle Rudolph caught a ball, and a couple over the middle were nice ones too, this is going to hurt Cruz's chance at the MVP. So I was like, no, don't throw it to him again. But he did. and so he threw him a few nice passes. And so as a result, like I say, Victor Cruz got jobbed out of the MVP. They brought in Breeze played the first quarter. Eli played the second. And then they brought in Wilson for the second half.
He might as well let the rookie play a couple quarters. What's the difference?
Well, yeah, and he did well, by the way. He threw 3 touchdown passes, right. Less than 100 yards, but threw 3 touchdown passes. But here was the thing. It looked like he threw the one pass to Cruz caught 8 passes in the first half, 1 in the third quarter, and I think it was 1 in the fourth that broke the record, Randy Moss's record, who he had caught 9 passes with the Vikings in the 2000 Pro Bowl. And so I was happy for Cruz to break the record. But here was the other thing. Twice on other occasions, you could see Wilson wanted to go to him, but the offensive line collapsed, and then Wilson had to scramble and then try to do something else with the ball. One of those two occasions was down in the red zone. It would have, he was looking for Cruz in the end zone. It would have been a touchdown. Now, 2 touchdown catches, Cruz would have had to be the MVP then, but the line collapsed. So they also sabotaged Victor Cruz's MVP.
You are way too excited about this. You got the vein popping out of your head and everything.
This is important for me.
Why is it important? It's the Pro Bowl.
It's NFL, baby. I live for this stuff.
Boy, this 2013 season can't start soon enough.
You're not kidding.
I really can't.
My goodness. I want training. I want the draft next week, and I want training camp the week after.
Well, OTAs and mini camps will be here. Shortly. So that should at least buy you some time.
Are you kidding me? I'm itching so bad for that. I need a huge bottle of baby powder.
And we aren't going to have baby. That's disgusting. Wow.
I don't want to imagine that right now.
No, not at all. So that's terrible. But we're not even going to have free agency until the first week of March. How are you going to spend your February?
Doing college hoops with you, John.
That's depressing for both of us. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to our calls. Len's down in Maryland. Len, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hi, guys.
What's up, Len?
Well, I just wanted to mention something about the Pro Bowl. I enjoyed it. Of course, I enjoy it every year. You probably figured this out.
Len likes his stars.
I like the stars. I mean, I'm a big Pro Bowl guy. Maybe I'm biased. I go back to a couple of early ones in L.A., 58, 59, when I was living out there as a teenager. And so I've been hooked I've been hooked on the Pro Bowl ever since. And it's always a great show. I watched every play, and I watched up to, right to the end to see Rudolph get the award. And, okay, I just shrugged my shoulders. That's the way it goes. But it was good to see our guys, you know, play. It was good to see them play, and it was good to see them play well. So I hope the NFL continues with the Pro Bowl. I think it's a good show. It's better than the figure skating in the hockey All-Star game, and it's better than 167 to 154 in the NBA game. You know, maybe baseball is a little better, but I hope the NFL decides to continue with the game. Martellus Bennett. Geez, I wish I could get more excited about Martellus Bennett. I just kind of shrug my shoulders. Maybe I keep thinking about, you know, the system that we run in offense, and Tom always talking about the blocking. You know, it's blocking first with our tight ends. And maybe a quick question for Paul, what he thinks on this, and then I want to go to that offensive tackle in the draft thing real quick, if I could.
Sure.
But first, you know, I mean, he is an exaggeration, but, you know, in our offensive scheme, maybe I could catch 55 passes as a tight end. I mean, you know, and if you combine the second and the third guys, you know, if you have three tight ends, maybe you get 55 passes out of them, and that's good enough. It just seems that the system doesn't dictate a Kyle Rudolph, which Collingsworth mentioned last night in referencing Rudolph and, you know, his great play. You know, more and more we're lining these guys up almost as flankers, these tight ends. And, you know, Rudolph is getting down the field. I mean, the tight ends are getting down the field, and we're going to see it Sunday in the Super Bowl. That's not our system. Now, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I don't think it's our system. Can we get 55 catches combined out of three tight ends next year, and that'll be good enough? So, I mean, if we sign Bennett, great. If we don't sign Bennett, you know, that's Jerry's decision, Coughlin's decision, whatever they think is best. But I wish I could get more excited about the guy. Now, on the offensive tackle, Paul mentioned he thought that's where we need to go, and I want to protect my assets. That's where I want to go. But my first question, here's my question for Paul. Did he mention offensive tackle because he didn't think Brewer could do the job? See, I'm hoping Brewer can do the job and we can go elsewhere. Maybe even somewhere else on the offensive line, in prep for the future when Chris Snee gives it up. So my question for Paul is, was he writing off Brewer as the guy?
What do you think, Paulie?
Or should we go offensive tackle?
Well, Len, I'm going to give you a piece of information, and I think it should give you a hint as to what the Giants think. As we got down to the end of the season, Brewer was practicing as a guard.
Yeah, I heard you say that earlier you know, during the season. Yeah,
that should tell you a little something right there. Because if he was clearly going to be the future at tackle, they probably would not have done that. Because they had a couple of other, you know, backup linemen on this team who, you know, even a couple of plug-in guys who were just filling roster spots who they could have probably thrown in there. Capers is more of a guard than he is a tackle. And yet...
Yeah.
They were practicing Brewer at guard ahead of Capers when they were worried about the health of the line at the end of the season. I don't think I need to say anything else.
And I talked to Brewer during the offseason. The interview will be on Giants.com in a couple of weeks, and he said he's feeling much more comfortable at guard, having been used there a lot. But, Len, I want to jump off of football for a second. Number one, it was Saturday morning. I was flipping around TV, and on VH1, they had a repeat of an old Saturday Night Live with Jennifer Lopez as the host, and I thought of you. Just wanted to tell you that first, number one. Number two.
You got to fill Paul in.
Yeah, Paul looks very confused.
You don't have to do it on air when you're off air.
Yeah, Paul looks very confused right now. But number two, how are you able to choose between the star power of the Pro Bowl with the SAG Awards going on at the same time? I imagine you were torn. Did you have two TVs going on at the same time?
Well, I'll tell you, the only problem I had was Tiger was doing well in golf, and I was going, you know, during timeouts and during breaks, I was switching over to the golf channel to watch the end of Tiger's quest to win a tournament in La Jolla. But that was the only thing that drew me to another channel. I'm hooked on the Pro Bowl. What can I tell you? I'm almost embarrassed to tell you that.
Don't be, Len. It's okay.
Again, you know, 14 and 15 years old, I'm out there in L.A. and I'm in the Coliseum, and Frank Gifford gets 1958, Frank Gifford, player of the game, actually January 59, but after the 58 season. You know, I mean, that stuck with me, so I stay with the Pro Bowl.
All right,
hey,
Len.
Listen, thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Paul Dottino actually covered that Pro Bowl with Frank Gifford.
And he charted everything in that game, too. He still has the legal pad to prove it.
How many passes to the left side of the field did Frank Gifford have in
that
game?
You know, for those of you who think the Pro Bowl's a joke, just remember that Tiki Barber and Jesse Armstead played their last game as Giants in the Pro Bowl. Just remember that.
I'm sure a lot of Giant fans don't remember that, actually, because it's the Pro Bowl.
So, it's, but it's in some cases, right. It's your last chance to see some of these guys
now,
wear that helmet.
Now, that joke came from, Len called up a couple weeks ago, and he was talking, I think we were actually talking about the Pro Bowl.
We were.
And he was talking about how much he liked the Pro Bowl, was looking forward to it. He goes, you know, I like that star power. If I see someone like Jennifer Lopez around, I want to go check that out and see what's going on. If she just shows up in the neighborhood. So, ever since then, the joke with Len has been about Jennifer Lopez.
I feel that way about Faith Hill.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you feel that way before she sang the Sunday Night Football song?
For many years.
Okay.
She is my celebrity crush.
Really?
Wow. Yes.
Interesting. Okay, I can see that.
Boy, we are pushing for more Giants games on Sunday nights next season. That'll spice things up a bit.
Not a problem.
I don't know if you should have admitted that on the air.
Now, here's the problem, though. What he needs the live performance before a Sunday night game at Giants Stadium.
You would have a hard time finding me in the press box if she was if she was live.
He'd
at
be
Giant
cutting
Stadium.
The grass down at
MetLife Stadium, I should say. Yes.
I'll tell you what, if you feel like Paul went hard after trying to get some of these interviews in the locker room after the game, that pregame interview with Faith Hill, white on rice.
Must see TV.
Oh, boy. We would have to arrange that, too.
201-939-4513. Alan's in Washington, D.C. Alan, good morning.
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Doing good, man. Couple things, man. First, Martellus Bennett, man. Can we give this guy a break, man? It was his first year. I don't think he had a bad year, you know. I know a lot of people are hard on him, but, you know, have we forgot Hakeem Nicks was out, most of the season? And, you know, that's our number one threat, I mean. And, you know, gave more attention to the other guys, you know. But I think, you know, starting early in the season when Hakeem Nicks was there, you know, he was, you know, Martellus Bennett was very productive. He actually caught, you know, several touchdowns early on. You know, towards the middle of the season, you know, it kind of slacked off a little bit. But, you know, I think he's earned another shot. You know, I think we should, you know, I don't know about that home discount. I don't know about all that, but I think he'll be back, you know. Also, want to know, I want to ask, what are we going to do with our run defense from the draft? I'm not sure what's going on there. Who are we looking at? Because our run defense was horrible. You know, I'm really concerned about that coming next year. Also, I want to talk about Terrell Thomas. I'm just curious to see, you know, what Paul might think about if he's coming back or not. He's very injury prone. And finally, you know, the NFC East, you know, it's wide open. You know, I think for next year, the G-men are, you know, pretty much very consistent. Philly and Dallas are both making, coaching, you know, changes, and the Redskins are dealing with the whole RG3 injury, and I think we have a good chance to steal that division. And, you know, it may be a little premature, but I would love to see the Giants play Big Brother Manning, Super Bowl at MetLife, because I know Manning wants to return the favor, because I know we won it in his backyard. So that's about it, guys.
All right, Steve, appreciate the call. Paul, Terrell Thomas first. Your thoughts on his outlook for next season?
I think we have to defer to Jerry Reese's comments at the end of the season when he said that if Terrell Thomas is able to physically make it back, it's going to likely be as a safety,
yep,
not as a corner. Having said that, though, you know, the Giants do have Antrell Roll here, who's got a $7 million base. I would think there's going to be some shuffling of those numbers if he's going to stay. And I do think
that would be a tough cut, though. I mean, it theoretically, if Antrell Roll says, I signed this contract 3 years ago, I'm not renegotiating this thing. You decide to give me this one, you're going to give it to me. And I would, honestly, I'd be hard-pressed to think the Giants would, even in that situation, decide to let a guy go who's so valuable and is so versatile and really has been such a good team guy the last couple of years.
It would be very difficult to do so. I just don't know, based on their other cap numbers,
right,
if a $7 million base is something they could deal with.
That's fair.
They may not be able to.
And you might be able to still give them the same money, maybe back some money up to next year, too.
Well, I didn't say pay cut. What I said is juggle the numbers.
Right.
They don't have to give them a pay cut to make that happen. They're very, very high on Will Hill, and they should be. And obviously, Stevie Brown was very productive. There are some things he still needs to get better at, but he's a guy who is a restricted free agent, and I'm pretty sure they're going to re-sign him.
Yeah, you would think.
So that gives the Giants three safeties, you would think. Now, does Terrell Thomas, if he winds up coming back into this league as a safety, become the Giants' fourth safety? I don't know that that's a likely scenario.
And you didn't mention Tyler Sash.
I don't see Tyler Sash necessarily being a fit for this team as they move forward. I think he was a decent special teams player who was too slow to really play the position that the Giants need him to play. And so I think his time here is probably up. But so they'll need a fourth safety, but you could draft one in the seventh round or get a free agent coming off the street, a rookie free agent or a veteran free agent to be the fourth safety. I don't know that Terrell Thomas is the guy who fits that spot for them.
But I don't think you'd have to invest a lot of money in him if
you
were to bring him
back.
So,
no matter who you are, you're not going
to
do it.
It's not a huge risk if they decide to go that route.
And similar for Kenny Phillips. I don't think if they bring him back, it'll be for a big money contract either. I don't think there are a lot of teams out there that are going to plop a big money contract on the table for a guy like Phillips that basically has had a bum knee for two out of the last 3 years.
Well, that's why I don't think the Giants at this point are going to keep Kenny Phillips in their plans. I think he's on their radar. That he possibly could come back.
So if in a few months no one's signed, then maybe you go back to him and say, do you want to come back?
I could see that happening.
Yeah, me too.
For example, 2 years ago, Deion Grant was an unrestricted free agent. He was sitting out there on the sofa, and then the Giants got into training camp. It wasn't really training camp with the labor stoppage. But they got into that shortened summer workout right before the season, and all of a sudden, guess what? A couple of guys got nicked up. Deion, you want to – you know, you doing anything?
How about Dave Tollefson? Same deal that year.
Right. So I could see that happening potentially with Kenny Phillips.
I agree. The other thing you mentioned, Lance, I think, was how do you fix the run defense? Well, that's interesting. If you want to draft an offensive lineman in the first round, Lance, let me get your take on this too. How do you improve that run defense and that front seven? Where do you get better? Does that have to be from within? Is it better coaching? Because that has to improve. The Giants did not win the battle of the line of scrimmage this year, either stopping the run or getting to the passer. If you're picking an offensive lineman in the first round, how do you fix that, which I still think was the biggest issue for this team this year?
Yeah, well, I would think that if they can get the stud offensive tackle that I'd like to see them get at 19, then when you go to the second round, you're looking at potentially a defensive tackle or perhaps a linebacker. You know, whatever fits there in terms of a better run-stuffing capabilities. The guy who's curious to me, John, and – I almost cringe to say this because you just don't know what he had left anyway, but Sean Rogers was going to be a big part of what the Giants wanted to do this year. And you look at that defensive tackle spot, and Canty gave them a third of a season, basically. I mean, I know he came back earlier than that, but he was kind of off and on because when he got back into the lineup, he wasn't physically right.
And he played well, though, that third
of the season. He did play well, but... You know, and Linval Joseph was the most consistent defensive lineman they had all year. I'm a big Linval Joseph fan. But the Giants build, or I'd say they built a reputation of their defense on a rotation. They need four guys. Now, Marcus Kuhn, by the time you got into that rotation, because remember, he was a rookie and he was green. By the time they worked him in and said, okay, we're comfortable enough to give you 20 snaps, he goes and hurts his knee and he's out for the year. So that defensive tackle spot was not very stable this season. Now, looking forward, you figure Canty will be back, although, again, his number's a little high. His cap number is over 4, and so that may have to get adjusted a little bit. You know Joseph is going to be back. You figure Marcus Kuhn's going to be back, but he's coming off an ACL. Most guys can make it back, but how effective is he going to be? Will it have set him back? You don't know the answer.
He's actually been here working out really hard trying
That's
to get
really
back to
that. That's really
good
news.
Injury. Yes.
Marvin Austin did not show anything last year, and that was very, very disappointing.
He was a healthy scratch a lot.
Not good.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a show-me camp for Marvin Austin. I like to say guys are show-me players. It's time to show you belong. He's a show-me player right now for me. So the Giants may, and Sean Rogers, who they brought in here as a 330-pound run plugger, who was going to give them 25 plays in early downs to help stuff the run and to help clog the middle. He comes down with a blood problem in training camp, and he's out for the season. He was signed to a 2-year deal, so he has another year left. Does Sean Rogers get the medical clearance, and then is he physically capable of giving the Giants some run clogging this season? I don't know the answer to that yet, John. I really don't.
Well, that's a big question. I mean, you wonder whether or not he's even contemplating retirement, depending on his medical situation. Man, blood clot is no joke. Even if you overcome that, do you want to get back out on the football field? But you're right. They had brought him over because they thought that he would be a big body that would help fill those gaps and stop the run. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out that way. You know, you mentioned that you would like to see them go offensive tackle in the first round. And I'm looking at the history of the first round with respect to the Giants. They have not taken a tackle.
William Roberts.
Well, I'm going back to Eric Moore in 1988.
Okay, that's fine. But you could go back further to Roberts.
How about Pettigrew?
Pettigrew was a guard, and that was 1999.
Became a tackle.
He ended up playing tackle, though.
So they haven't really invested a first-round pick in an offensive lineman. And then if you want to go linebacker, Carl Banks in 1984.
Right.
The trends show that they're not necessarily going to go in the direction of the two biggest needs on this team right now.
Which is why I said if Jerry Reese pops his head out on that Monday night and says, we think this defensive end out of North Carolina, he's a player, would not surprise me.
Or if they maybe go corner again.
I'd be very surprised if they picked another young corner. That's why I think all these people that want to get rid of Corey Webster, you're already relying on a young guy in Prince, a young guy in Hosley. I'm not sure I'm comfortable letting loose the one veteran you have in that cornerback staff. I wouldn't be.
No, I wouldn't either. But and again, Corey's got a high cap number, yep, which needs to be adjusted.
That is correct. 201-939-4513. The guy that made all this happen this morning is Dave in Rochester. He's been asking for Dottino for weeks, and now he's here. Dave, good morning.
Paul, my man, Dottino, I'm glad you took out time from your mall walking and your bingo to be on the show.
How you doing, brother?
Man, Lance gave me $20 to say that, so I just had to figure it out. I would like to think I was a big part of you being on the show, and it we make jokes and we try to roast you, but we really appreciate you being on the show, so thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And, you know, I want to go off the Giants' railroad tracks for a minute, and I want to go into NFL situations.
Sure.
Can you tell me, and we talked about it last week a little bit, and Johnny and Lance gave me their take, but I guess I just want to hear your take. New Phillies coach, Michael Vick, a couple QBs that are kind of in question, me being from Rochester, Fitzpatrick, and then Alex Smith, what do you think?
I'm not a big Fitzpatrick fan. I think, you know, he had that really strong start last season and then tailed off. And this season, quite honestly, I think if you talk to any Bills fan, they would come back at you and say, well, he's okay. I mean, he's Joe Ferguson-like.
Someone had a talk with Ralph Ventry in the car ride up to the basketball game, a big Bills fan.
I don't think he likes him at all.
No, exactly.
You know, he's Joe Ferguson-like. You know, he's a competent NFL starter. He'll make some plays. He'll do some good things for you. But on the whole, is he the kind of guy who's going to raise you to the next level? I don't think so. But, you know, again, he's not terrible. He's one of those guys who's like, he's okay to be there.
How about Alex Smith?
Alex Smith is a real tough one for me, John.
I mean, think he can start in the league, though. I don't think he's a top star, but I think he can start in the league.
He's better than Mark Sanchez. How about that?
Well, that's a pretty long list. So,
on that point, where's he going to go? Where's Alex Smith going to be next year, you think?
Well, the first thing he's got to figure out is how much money does he want and how much of a promise does he want that he's going to get a shot at a starting job. So before you start picking out locations, he's going to have to find out when he goes on these interviews, if he goes. I mean, remember now, he's in a position where he's going to make $4 million, right, this year as a base. I think that's his number. And so he needs to talk to the Niner management and say, look, if you guys think Cappy's the guy, you now have to deal with me. What are we going to do here? If you think I am strictly a number two, what's the deal? Am I getting my $4 million, or are you guys going to try to readjust me? Because at $4 million, he's got to be by far the most expensive backup quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, Kyle Orton makes $2 million, and I think he's the highest paid one.
Right? So yeah. I think we all agree you can't pay him $4 million and make him sit on the bench. So that's the first thing you got to figure out. Are they going to redo a deal with him or give him a pay cut? That's the first thing.
He's actually due $7.5 million this year.
$7.5 million?
Yeah, and he gets a $1 million roster bonus in March. That's what the situation is for 2013 for Alex Smith.
Holy smokes!
So something tells me they'll either – I think – look, Alex Smith is an asset. There's a lot of NFL teams out there that need a quarterback, whether it's Philadelphia, whether, frankly, it's the Jets.
I like
whether
Jacksonville.
Whether it's the Jacksonville Jaguars, whether it's the Kansas City Chiefs, you can make the argument too. Andy Reid's probably going to want to bring a new quarterback there. I think there are a lot of teams that will be willing to give up a second or third round pick probably a second, to be honest with you, for Alex Smith to be their quarterback. To me, the Niners have to explore that. For a team to be that good and be that stacked, to add that type of pick, I think you have to do it, don't you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you consider some of the quarterbacks who've changed hands in the last few years, and the going rate seems to be like a number two at the very least. Remember when Cobb went to the Cards?
I would consider him like a Matt Schaub type, and Matt Schaub, they got a two for him.
Right, he was also a two. Calls. Yeah. He was also a two.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's kind of the going rate for an experienced backup, or at least for a backup that you think is going to do something. Well, it didn't work out in Seattle too well, did they, for Flynn?
I suppose not.
And he's another guy that's going to probably be on the market. Seahawks will probably look to move him as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, here's the other problem, though. A team that makes a deal for Alex Smith, they're going to inherit that contract.
That's true. And then if the Niners to trade him, if some of that signing bonus money,
yeah,
all that gets moved up, and the Niners would take a huge cap hit the year they make the trade.
Yeah. And that's not too cool either. So that's going to affect this. You know,
might be tougher to move than you think.
So, but as far as he's concerned, he also, again, he's going to be part of this because he's going to have to talk to the Niner management, and he has to be comfortable with whatever situation they've decided on. Because if he flat out is like, I'm not doing this, I don't care how much money you pay me, I'm not sitting here behind Cappy. Well, now they got a problem because now they got to move. So,
you see Alex Smith going to the Jets, or Sanchez for that matter. What? Is he going to be in? Because he's got that
$8 million
contract.
Also a cap problem for the Jets, though. They're not in a position where they could get rid of him. They're stuck. The Jets are stuck with Sanchez. They screwed themselves over with their last re-signing of him.
Yep.
See, the Jets can't absorb Alex Smith's contract because of what they have tied up in Mark Sanchez right now. So you pretty much can eliminate them from the running. Unless by miracle they're able to move Sanchez, which I would say is highly unlikely.
Yes. And even with that, again, the bonus will be accelerated, and the Jets are going to take a big hit for trying to move Sanchez.
So basically this year we're going to see the Jets with Sanchez just because of the money.
Well, they're going to have to basically go with him. Now, whether or not he winds up becoming the starter, look, it may turn out during training camp that they just decide, okay, wow, you know, Joe Schmo is better. That could happen. And they may be forced to sit him on the bench, but I don't see how they move him.
All right, Dave. Well, appreciate the call, buddy.
All right, Dottino, thank you, man. I've been lobbying for you for a couple weeks.
And, okay, thanks.
We got to get you and Eisen on the show together.
Hey, you know, I'll be around during the offseason periodically. It's always good to be down here.
All right, man. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks, all right, Dave.
Thanks so much.
There you go.
How
about
cool.
Vic? What do you think Vic's going to wind up, by the way?
Well, you know,
I don't think Chip Kelly's going to want to keep him around. That's just my opinion.
You know what, John? What's Vic's number right now? Do we know?
I think it's three. I think he has three this year.
I believe John's right.
You know, if he and Kelly sit down and have a powwow, and Kelly's convinced, A, that Vic is still physically capable of doing the things that Michael Vic has done, because I'm one who believes he's on the down.
So,
I believe.
And
it.
I agree. And I think you got to question his ability as a decision maker, his physical attributes put aside.
Well, but you have to decide because you've been beaten up the last couple years.
Sure.
You do need, first of all, figure out what is he physically capable of doing.
Well, and decide if he can hold up over the course of an entire year.
Second thing, then, you have to figure out, okay, mentally, where's this guy at?
Right.
And then also you need to, what's his number?
It is three. He gets $3 million. I think that's part of a signing bonus, if I'm reading correctly.
All right, that's not out of control for a guy who, if you believe he's going to legitimately compete as a starter, that's not out of whack.
Nope.
You know, it's not out of whack. Now, if you really believe that he's not going to be your starter, and absolutely positively, no, I do not want to move forward with this guy, that's a different story. But I don't think that's the case. I got a feeling when they sit down that Kelly's going to say, look, you compete for the job. I think that's what's going to happen. And I think at that point you keep him.
So well, you Vic and Foles have a real competition?
I think so.
But Vic
even though
is more
different,
suitable.
They're different kind of offenses. And
correct.
He's better suited for Kelly. But I think that it's more of a physical question in terms of can Michael Vick physically do it at this point? Kelly's going to have to look at him in the spring. I think that's what's going to happen. He's not going to be a cap cut like early, you know, in March, and he's going to look at him and okay, let's see the off season. Michael Vick, what do you look like?
And let's also see what they do with the offensive line. Remember, that was a big issue for Michael Vick this season.
That's been a big issue for the last two seasons. Why do you think he's gotten his brain scrambled?
But they're going to need to make improvements there if Chip Kelly wants to also run the style of offense that he has done throughout his years at Oregon.
Chip Kelly's going to have a lot of work here.
I mean, there's some pieces in place, but there's a lot of holes
on
this team.
Yeah, they had great the skill positions, but things like the offensive line, you have to patch up. Otherwise, those guys aren't going to be able to do anything.
And defense, they have questions, too.
Especially in the secondary.
There is absolutely no doubt. And quite honestly, John, I said this all last summer when I tried to handicap the NFC East. I thought that all four teams in the division were weak on the offensive line.
And we actually said whichever team played the best on the offensive line will probably win the division. And that's what happened.
Ultimately, that is what happened. Ultimately. When push came to shove, it was the Redskins' offensive line that actually held up the best, certainly with the run.
Certainly with the run.
No question about that. They became a very offensive force with their running game.
Best running team in the division, and it wasn't close.
May have been the best running team in the conference.
Yep.
Okay?
You're right.
And then on top of that, RG3 was running around like a maniac back there to kind of help buy some time for these guys, and that's what happened. And so, that part of it didn't surprise me. What surprised me was that the Giants were not the playoff team.
All right, I want to backtrack on a couple of things here. Number one, back to that Kyle Rudolph point a long time ago. I think the caller did make a good point in that the Giants don't use tight ends the same way a lot of other teams use tight ends, in that they need their tight end to block. And if the tight end doesn't block, generally he's not going to play. And if you go back to that rumored trade where the Giants wouldn't trade the draft pick for Tony Gonzalez, one of the reasons they probably didn't want to do that is because Tony Gonzalez, and he's admitted this himself, it's not exactly what you would call a big-time willing blocker. He's a pass receiver.
Adequate.
That happens to play tight end.
Adequate.
So whatever the Giants do with tight end, whether it's Martellus Bennett or somebody else, it's never going to be a guy that's going to catch 80 balls, generally. And that's why Jeremy Shockey got upset here a lot of the time, because he was being used as a blocker rather than being used as a receiver.
Right.
That's just Coughlin's system. So whoever they bring has to be a two-way player. Just judging him by the number of catches isn't exactly how the Giants are judging things here.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I never thought Travis Beckham was going to be a good fit, because they were bringing in this athlete who was supposed to be a great matchup in the passing game, but that's never been the Giants' way.
Right.
I'll be honest with you. I questioned that pick, and I don't question the personnel department here very often, but I didn't understand how he fit what the Giants do. And you know what? Here it is. How many years later? We still don't know how he fits. And I got to think he's on his way out.
Especially with the torn ACL, too, that he was trying to recover from throughout this season. That's why he had also took away from his explosiveness and his effectiveness and when they tried to use him.
And yet, having said all that, Martellus Bennett still caught 50 balls this year.
Well, the question is, though, regarding how they utilize the tight end, and I'll throw this out to both of you. Do you feel that Bennett got frustrated with the system as the season progressed, and that's maybe why the route running wasn't as crisp, because he didn't want to block like they called for?
I don't think so, to be honest with you. I think his head was pretty much in the game. I think he gave up some routes, which got Eli Manning upset at times in the secondary, but I don't think he ever got upset with his role in terms of blocking a lot.
No, I don't think so either. I think the guy wants to win, and I think the guy's really happy to be out from Witten's shadow. And obviously in this division, it was pretty cool for him to play Dallas and everything else. I do think he wants to be here. He said as much. He said he wants to give the Giants a hometown discount. So I don't think he's upset with how they used him. But at the same time, if Martellus Bennett thinks he's one of the most valuable, eight or nine tight ends in the NFL, I think he's probably reaching a little bit. He's probably a little bit under that. Maybe he might be number 12.
Yeah,
be fair.
Think of it this way too. Everyone talks about how Martellus Bennett is more comfortable here than he's been anywhere else. Look, New York's used to some weird folks. There are some out there people in this city that the media interacts with. When a weird cat like Martellus Bennett walks into the locker room and he's a little off the beaten path from time to time. In New York, you raise a couple eyebrows. Like, whatever. We've seen stuff like this before. But if he's walking into a locker room, say like Jacksonville or Carolina or Atlanta or Tampa Bay, I think he might have a little bit more trouble blending in places like that, just based on the outside comfort zone, than he would in a place like New York, which is one of the reasons I think he might actually consider doing a quote-unquote hometown discount for the Giants.
We've seen it all here.
Yeah. Well, you're here every day.
Oh, golly. I walked into that.
Yes, you did.
Go ahead, Lance.
I was going to say, I'm just perusing the rest of the teams around the league, and I'm just trying to assess what the tight end market is like. I don't see a lot of teams with huge needs at that position.
Well, do we have a list of the free agents, the potential free agents at tight end? Do we know what that list looks like?
Lance, I mean, bring that up.
Just for the heck of it, take a glance, because you know, if you're talking about...
He might be the number one guy in the market, actually.
Pass-catching tight ends at 50 receptions, yeah. Mm-hmm. He might be the lead guy. That is possible, John. I don't know that, but you don't think of him in that vein, but it's possible.
I'd probably put maybe Fred Davis near the top of the list. I mean, he's coming off an injury though, so that's definitely a question mark.
Ed Dixon's restricted. I wouldn't get too excited about that.
Dustin Keller's out there.
Is he restricted as well?
He's unrestricted.
Unrestricted. Just
Brandon Myers, who had a great season with the Raiders.
With the Ravens, he's restricted, but there's a guy certainly who has been productive.
They got to bring him back, you figure. He's one of Joe
Based on what role he played, you would think they'd be aggressive.
Delanie Walker actually is a very underutilized receiving tight end. He might actually make some money somewhere, Delanie Walker. He's a good player.
I think so. I agree with that.
I like Delanie Walker. He's a very good underutilized player.
All right, but see, of the unrestricted free agents at tight end, to be perfectly honest with you, and again, Tony Gonzalez is retiring.
Bennett's
made that very clear.
Bennett's top two or three. Easy.
There's no doubt about it.
Easy.
Without question.
He might be one. You could make the argument.
Wow.
I mean, him, Keller, and I think Delanie Walker are probably the three top three guys.
So
and I throw Brandon Myers up there. I think he's going to get some money based on how he performed.
So I think it's fair to say, and of course Dallas Clark is at the end of his career, but it's fair to say then that if somebody out there is going to be interested enough in Martellus Bennett, or quite frankly, needs a really good two-way tight end, Martellus Bennett has shown he can do both things. It wouldn't be out of the question for someone to perhaps throw him a little bit of cash that may make it difficult for the Giants to chase him.
All right, I want to jump to the Super Bowl, Paul.
It could happen.
Break it down for me. Niners, Ravens. How do you see this thing playing out here?
Well, I think the one thing I should say before we even go into any kind of analysis is that I do like Ray Rice a lot. Okay? I am a Ray Rice fan.
Oh, he's from Jersey.
He's actually from New York, right across the river at Yonkers.
Well,
but
he went to school.
New Rochelle.
Excuse me.
Yeah, but Rutgers guy.
Right.
Who I've always had great admiration and respect for as a player and as a person. And quite honestly, when he was at Rutgers, I thought he'd be a really good kickoff returner in the NFL. I did not think he would make it as a running back on an every down basis. I was wrong. So for that reason, I'm pulling for Ray Rice, and I'm going to pull for the Ravens to win for him.
Maybe you should go down to New Orleans and give Ray Rice a public apology.
Yeah. I've already given it to him here on Giants.com.
Yeah, fair enough.
So
plus, I'm sure he could run laps with you. He'd be more than happy to do that.
I think he could run laps around me, actually.
Very good try.
Yes. So I will say that for that reason alone, I'm going to hope that the Ravens win.
Well, who do you think's going to win?
I believe the Niners are going to win. I do. Even though the Ravens seem to be the team of destiny, I will tell you this. I believe that because of what the Niners have shown in terms of their diversification, okay, I think it's going to pose too many different types of scenarios to where Bill Parcells used to tell us all the time, fellas, I want to match up one-on-one each guy on the starting 12 or starting 11 on each side of the ball, and then I want to decide how many ways we can win and how many ways the other team can win. And when I look at those charts, that will help me determine how I feel about the game. I do this every week. Parcells theories. I do this every single week. I don't talk to you guys about it much, but I do this every single week when I size up a game. The Niners have the edge on those lists, so I will pick the Niners to win this game.
You know, here's the funny thing. They talk about Parcells making the Hall of Fame and his coaching tree. I never see your name on that list.
It's okay. I'm a silent coach. That's how come I've been here for 30 years. You know, coaches get fired a lot quicker than 30 years.
You know, it's funny. I agree with you. I think if you break this game down through the X's and O's and say which team is better on both sides of the ball, I think the 49ers are the better team here. I really do. I think you break it down. The one weakness the Ravens have had all year is stopping the run, and the Niners have one of the best running games in the NFL.
Yes.
Their offensive line is so big and strong, I think they can control that very strong and aggressive Ravens defensive line.
And by the way, the Niners can throw it too.
No question.
Don't discount
that. I'm getting there. And the Ravens defensive backfield, not the fastest guys, but you know what? Besides Torrey Smith, the Ravens don't exactly have the fastest wide receivers either with Anquan Boldin. But they are physical. What is the one thing that the Redskins defense does extremely well? They are physical, and I think they'll out-physical those Ravens offensive players. And then, again, you can throw the ball. That Ravens defense has been banged up all year long. I think Kaepernick can make some plays down the field. I'd like to see who they line up against Vernon Davis. You saw those two guys finally connect last week for the first time. I think everything tells me the Niners are going to win, but I'm picking the Ravens. And here's why. Magic.
Karma.
We've seen the Ravens beat teams that are better than them for two straight weeks now. The Patriots are better than Baltimore, and the Broncos are better than Baltimore. Ravens won those games anyway. This smells like the Giants to me from last year. It whiffs of it, and I've picked games poorly all year just because I looked at X's and O's, and I learned my lesson. This is karma.
I get it.
That's why the Ravens are going to win.
Well, it would not surprise me if it went that way, but I'm going to lean, like Paul, towards the Niners' way, and I think it comes down to the linebacker core for San Francisco. I think they're big. I think they're physical. You know, Baltimore beat New England with the underneath routes because they didn't have the luxury of going deep. So even if they don't have the luxury of going deep, I'm not sold that Anquan Boldin and Dennis Pitta are going to have good matchups against those Niners linebackers. And therefore, I think they're going to have a rough time moving the chains. That could present issues for Joe Flacco and company.
You know, I also think that part of what this whole Baltimore aura is about, they've beaten Tom Brady and the Patriots in Foxborough, which is next to impossible to do in the postseason. But let's not forget, the Patriots didn't play well.
They turned the ball over.
They played very poorly, actually. And I'm not going to say that the Ravens didn't play well, because they did. But, boy, the Patriots, for some reason, brought, like, their C game into the stadium
that
day.
I'm telling you, that's that type of thing, though, where you wonder what kind of magical ride the Ravens are on. I don't think anybody would argue the Packers didn't play their best game against the Giants last year in the playoffs. They came around and they played like crap.
But you could also make the argument the Niners are on somewhat of a magical run, too. And that karma's in their favor with the whole change of quarterback, Kaepernick being a rookie, teams having trouble adjusting
to him.
They
were the number two seed. I have trouble saying they're on a magical round when you're the two seed.
But you know
and you were the favorite in every single round of the playoffs you played in.
But I also think that their opponents played better than the Ravens' opponents did in the postseason.
Oh, that's true. I don't think the Falcons played a bad game in
the NFC
Championship
game. Falcons played a very good
game. Yeah.
Matt Ryan played well.
Except for those two turnovers, which obviously killed them.
I still think if you grade him and that Falcons
game, they
were
up 17-0.
Falcons played well in that game,
especially offensively, no question.
You know, I mean, you could consider the Bronco game. Yeah, the Broncos wound up, you know, giving that game away, and they played very well too. But again, I think the Patriots just, for some reason, and this baffles me probably more than anything else I've seen in the playoffs. How could the Patriots just not have it that day, at home, postseason?
It happened,
Foxborough. In 10 years, we haven't seen that. You know, I mean, that's – Patriots don't do that at home in a postseason. They just – they played really bad football that day.
Welker had
the
drop.
Look at the Giants this season, though, too. 6-2 start. Who would have thought that they would have performed the way they did against Atlanta and Baltimore back-to-back?
Yeah,
sometimes football's unpredictable.
Have you managed to figure that out yet, by the way? With all your tape study, what happened to the Giants in those two games against Baltimore at the Falcons? Because I know you've been in your laboratory, you know, pouring the things, you know, using the Bunsen burner, trying to figure out exactly what happened at the end of the season.
I still believe, and I don't want to belabor it, but I still believe that this team was mentally, physically, and emotionally battered from the last two seasons. I've looked at it, the accumulation of the 2011 season. If you remember, they fought like hell through the 2011 season to even get to 7-7. And then they had to expend so much to then win the 6 in a row win the Super Bowl.
I don't disagree.
I think that team was probably more gassed at the end of their Super Bowl run than any team I could remember. And then
they did have 6 months to recover, though, from that.
Well, but it became a shortened off season because then they had the full camp, which they didn't have the year before, okay? They started out with a bunch of guys hurt. It continued. I mean, at one point, 13 guys in the first half of the season were on the pre-practice injury list, which we used to look at every single Wednesday before we did our MSG show.
Yep.
It was nuts. And they were not just guys who were hurt, but they were key guys. We talked about Perry Fuel and his defense before. Look, I could tell you for a fact, all right, I'm not giving out any secrets here on Giants.com. Going into the year, Perry Fuel had huge plans for Jaquan Williams. He was going to be a significant part of this defense. Trust me when I tell you that. So was Kenny Phillips. And when those two guys got hurt, it really messed up what Perry wanted to do schematically, big time. It threw a bigger chink into that chain than the Giants wanted to admit.
But Stevie Brown stepped in and did an excellent job with all those turnovers.
Stevie Brown was terrific in terms of his production, in terms of numbers, But in terms of the kinds of things they wanted to do, they couldn't do the same things that they wanted to do with Kenny.
Well, and then they probably had to move on to a roll around to make up
Bingo.
For Kenny Phillips' loss as
Bingo.
Well.
Bingo. And right. that and then the corners also. Again.
A lot of injuries. Yep, that's fair.
And I don't want to say injuries are an excuse, but they are a reason. And when you combine that with the fact that the bye week was week 10, the latest week you can have the bye in the NFL,
which
is week 10.
Was actually happy about.
I
by
thought
the
that
way.
Was a positive though for the
he
team.
He was happy because it allowed them to get through that first 9-10 games of the season. But at the same time, what happened was they took so much juice to get to that point that when they finally got there, it was almost like the re-energizing of the bye week wasn't worth as much because they had already depleted so much of their energy.
But they had a great performance against the Packers coming off of that bye.
And I think what happened, what you saw, in my opinion, again, I'm talking about emotionally, you got to throw in the Katrina thing, which also impacted this team. I don't buy so much the other outside forces, but I do buy the Katrina thing did impact the team. And then when they finally push game to shove, this team then goes on the road.
You mean the Sandy thing, by the way, right? Katrina, the New Orleans?
Yes, Hurricane Sandy. I said, you're right.
But thank you. Just wanted to make
thank
sure.
Thank you. You're right. I don't mean to disrespect New Orleans.
No,
people.
Not at all.
Honestly.
There's been a lot of storms,
honestly,
unfortunately.
I didn't realize you said it either.
Yeah, so good catch, Lance. I don't mean to belittle that at all, the Sandy thing. But here's what I will say. The Bengals were a desperate team trying to make their way as a playoff contender. And again, we've heard this from Chris Candy time and time again. As the defending Super Bowl champions, the Giants had a big X on their chest, and they were getting everybody's best game every week.
How about the Ravens, though? They had lost three straight. Their season was on the brink before that game against the Giants.
Think about this now. The Bengals, the Ravens, the Falcons, and even the Redskins with their win over the Giants at the last part of the season. All four of those teams, you could easily say that game against the Giants was their pivotal game in making a playoff run.
Yeah, I was joking with I was joking with Anciarolo about this the other day, and I made the point to him that if you look at the last three seasons, the Giants have been the litmus test for teams to make runs to the Super Bowl. Whether it was the Packers 3 years ago, the Giants obviously made the run themselves in 2011, and then this year with the Ravens. They lost three straight. They go out there, beat the Giants, propels them to this crazy run.
Okay, and oh, by the way, to just pile on to this point, over the last 2 years, the Giants have had, if I'm not mistaken, either the first or second toughest combined schedules over the last two seasons.
It'll be a little easier next year playing the AFC West.
Okay,
a little bit.
So that's what I'm selling right now. In retrospect, I'm selling that the team was mentally, emotionally, and physically gassed, that over the course of the second half of this season, they could not do it week in and week out. They were able to do it a couple of times. A couple of times they were able to finally suck it up and get some fumes going, but ultimately they could not sustain.
So tweaks this offseason, not overhauls.
Tweaks, but there are going to be some names. There are going to be some names that if they
major tweaks. How about that?
Could be some major tweaks because if those numbers don't get jimmied, some names may not be here.
But priority number one is to restructure the money, not necessarily get rid of guys.
That's how I see it. That's how I see it, Lance. Yeah, but you know what? Bottom line. Giants will get it done because this organization has shown over the last decade that they'll do what's necessary to try to stay in contention.
Now I want to get to the important stuff here. What are like Paul D'Antino's vacation plans here for the offseason? Do you have anything big in the hopper here? How are you keeping yourself busy? Are you playing flag football on the side?
I never think vacation. You know me. I never think vacation.
I can see you walking around like the Bahamas on the beach in the sand. I think you'd enjoy that. Get some nice scenery.
You know what? Over the last two, since the Super Bowl, the second win over the Patriots.
Yeah.
I've actually thought about an island vacation.
I could totally see you enjoying an island vacation.
I thought about that.
And then you noticed the Pro Bowl was on the following week and decided to watch that. Tremendous toss up here. Island vacation, Pro Bowl, chart.
You know what? I've never been to Vegas.
I don't think that would go well for
no.
you.
No?
Wow.
No, I don't.
No?
A weak escapade in Vegas for Paul D'Antino.
You don't think?
I don't know if Vegas can handle you.
No, you know what Paul would hate about Vegas? He tried to take one of those power walks down the strip, and you know those guys with the cards? Are you aware of the guys with the cards? You don't know about the guys with the cards.
The
three-card Monty guy. You have these guys with these cards with advertisements for a myriad of services on the sidewalk on the strip.
Oh.
And when you try to walk by, they kind of click the cards And, like, they try to give you the cards, the advertisements, for various entertainment purposes later on in the evening. And they will bother you during your walks up and down the strip. I don't think you would enjoy that.
But, see, what you don't know about me is that when I go on these walks, I go into a zone. And I've got this mean SOB look on my face to where people run.
I'm telling you, Paul. These guys can get very aggressive. No. I don't think you would like that.
They want no part of this Jersey Soprano, trust
And quite
me.
Frankly, I don't think your whole demeanor and passion and some lack of sanity at times would do well on the casino floor.
Yeah, probably not.
You know, Paul would sit there looking at a 10 and a 6 on 16 at the blackjack table, start banging the table trying to figure out whether he wants to hit.
No, I just want to know where the blitz is coming from.
Well,
I don't know if that'll help you out there.
Could you imagine, though, Paul, on the beach in the Bahamas with, like, the telestrator in front of him in the sand, looking out into the ocean, drawing out the plays?
Wow. That sounds pretty cool, actually.
You can, like, draw out plays on the back of the sea turtle.
I gotta bring one of those. Was it iPads that, like, has a DVD thing in it, so I could play, like, the Super Bowl from 2 years ago and rewatch.
That's
it.
Called a laptop.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
An iPad with a DVD player is called a laptop.
Yeah, but you get sand in that; it's bad.
Well, you don't want
to
get sand.
See,
in
that's here. Why he sticks to the Lego pad. You're old school.
I'm definitely old school.
You know, he'll have his legal pad, he'll have his telestrator, he'll have his phonograph playing his records from, like, the 50s, and I think we'll be in good shape.
And the Nikes, more importantly.
Well,
can't
there
forget
you go.
The Nikes. Can't
there
forget
you go.
That. How many pairs do you go through every season, just out of curiosity?
I don't.
Really?
I don't. I just go through one, believe it or not.
Now, if you walked on the beach
in
this fictitious tropical paradise, if you're walking on the beach, are you walking with sneakers or without?
Without.
Okay. Because you don't want to get sand in the kicks.
No. No. That would be – well, I did it once.
Do you swim?
No, I do not.
You don't swim?
No.
Why not?
No. No, 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 no. Well, I stay on the beach, not in the water.
Why don't you swim?
I don't know. Water seems
not
like
a
touchy subject here.
Not a fan.
Was there a young Paul DiTino incident that we should know about?
Not a fan.
Not a fan
not
of
a
the
fan.
Water.
You afraid of the sharks? You think there's some sharks?
Sharks
out there?
Are not nice. They do bad things to you. So do jellyfish.
But your ancestors come from an archipelago.
Look,
a lot of water.
Look, hey, I'm Italian and I don't like soccer either. So, what does that tell you? I'm not necessarily a conformist, John.
Oh, well, I think we all know you're not a conformist.
And I know our listeners were looking forward to you breaking down the Premier League in about 5 minutes.
Oh, man. How did this get off of football? That's what I want to know.
I want to try to have some fun with you.
Yes, oh, absolutely. That's okay.
People are interested about your personal life.
Oh, God.
We get tons of phone calls.
No, there's nothing interesting about that. I'm a workaholic like you, Lance.
Yes, oh, trust me. I can understand that.
That's just what we do.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
Every morning I come here, Lance is watching videos on NFL.com as he does his hardcore research
That's
for the
right.
show. That's true.
Do you really?
Yes. Well, I mean,
I'm
nowhere near you. I mean, I haven't charted things to the 10th degree.
No, you
as
don't.
Paul
you
DiTino,
don't. You
but
trust me, you don't want to be like me. That's,
well,
it's
that's
dangerous.
True.
It's yes. very yeah. dangerous to be like
no
me.
No argument there.
No. But I, in all honesty, fellas, I mean this really with all sincerity. You know, it's college basketball time now. John and I do a lot of college basketball stuff together. And that's going to kind of take up most of my time as we get into the second week of March. Obviously, NFL free agency does start the first week of March. Excuse me. Now, that's going to be a big deal because you got to worry about who's going to be doing what with cap numbers and who may or may not be cut. And like I said, I think the Giants have a number of guys, big name guys, who are making, you know, $4 million and up on their base. And they're going to have to do some juggling there for sure. So that's going to kind of keep my eye kind of a little bit on that while I'm doing college hoop. And then before you know it, there's the third week of April, that weekend, the draft is here, you know. And then there's rookie mini camp, and there's OTAs, and then the oregano starts flowing again. And then, you know, nothing.
The references, you don't miss them, man.
Like I love to say, John, and I don't know, you probably haven't heard me say it often, but I've said it enough of times, it's the sauce be bubbling and the oregano be flying. And that's good. That's when I'm really cooking.
Oh,
and I cannot wait. To the first day of training camp. I know it's going to be down here at the Timex Center this season. John, do we have a date yet? We don't have a date yet, do we?
We do not have a date yet.
I wish we did. I wish it was like next week. I really do.
I would just cancel all your plans in April, May, June, and July, and I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's good.
Leave it open. Leave the calendar open. This
Look,
way you
I know
have a lot of flexibility.
I know it's going to be in late July, that's for sure. That's the way it always is. And, you know, I cannot wait because that's my favorite part. I love training camp. I really do.
Not going back to Albany, by the way.
Well, you know, I know. We're going to be here. But, you know, I will tell you this. Folks, are you out there, you know, you listen to Giants.com. You remember now, this year, we actually did video. Giants.com, we did video training camp shows up in Albany. That was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
We had a good time with those, you know, and I think the fans got a kick out of it. And I know we had a really good time doing it. And the thing that I liked about doing that was, you know, it gave us an opportunity to really share with the fans a lot about what training camp is about. Many don't get to see any of it. They don't get to come out. They don't get to visit it. They don't really know the flavor of what training camp is. I love it. Well, I eat it up.
They'll be able to come out to the TPC now this upcoming year to watch
training
camp.
That's true. Now, 2 years ago, when they had the makeshift deal because of the labor shortage and they had the shortened kind of workouts here, it was a little different. It was kind of like
put together
very quickly.
Yeah.
They threw some bleachers out here. They said, fans, we're going to be out here, and if you want to come out and see. And some people came out, but it wasn't really a training camp. It was kind of an abbreviated workout.
Now, we haven't discussed this, but you're going to be our official greeter for training camp this year. You're going to stand outside the TPC
and
welcome in all the fans. That's correct.
Oh, wow.
In your Nikes.
In my Nikes.
Yes. That's a must.
And, you know, Nike's the official sponsor of this league.
Look at how convenient that is.
Why can't they take care of me? I don't understand this.
The positive is.
No, because I absolutely love my Nike Monarchs. You ask me how many pairs do I go through a year? I go through one pair of Nike Monarchs per season because they hold up so well. I love them. They're great.
I don't know why Nike doesn't cut a deal with you. I mean, you tend to pat them on the back every 5 seconds. Yeah? They might as well throw you some shoes some apparel.
I think Nike has a prototypical athlete that they like to be the symbol of their products, and something tells me.
You mean
it's not Paul DeTino?
My measurables don't add up?
No.
But he's got a slight chance now. You see, Chip Kelly had a big deal with Nike, left Oregon.
He's an Eagle, though.
Now he's going to the Eagles. So there's
Paul
maybe
wants nothing from
Philadelphia. There's some cash opening up, supposedly, in Nike land.
Oh.
They may be sending it your way. You never know. I look at it as a positive. The whole benefit of the Giants working out at the Timex Center this training camp is that you don't have to pack up the Nikes. It's going to be a hop, skip, and a jump.
You can actually
right
walk
here.
Probably from your house to here to watch training camp.
So look at how convenient that is for you.
You know, it's 2 years ago, when they were here for that shortened camp, you know, getting here every day is really good because then you get to really see a whole lot of stuff. You know, when the guy's up in Albany, John knows, I'd make one or two trips a week, and that was it. So, you know, I felt very empty. Because I wasn't seeing enough.
Well, you know what happened? They were actually going to make the announcement that, you know, they were going to, you know, stay in Albany. And then they said, wait a second. If we come back down here, Paul's going to be here every day. They almost reconsidered the whole plan to stay in. They were going to stay in Albany. Because they're like, we don't want to see DeTino every day. So maybe we'll actually stay up there for him here. But then they decided, you know what? Let's bring it back home.
Well, I'm glad that Tom reconsidered.
Yes.
I really am.
They had a full meeting to discuss this. The pros and cons of having Paul DeTino around 5 days a week versus 2 days a week.
Well, they were termed the tipping point meetings, and it ended up tipping towards coming back down.
Wow.
Here. Yes,
did you help me out with this, John?
I recommended we stay in Albany.
You did?
Yeah. And then Dave from Rochester made a call.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That changed their mind.
Correct.
There you go.
All right, Paul. Appreciate
Guys,
the time. This is a lot of fun.
Good to be here,
and we'll see you in a couple weeks, all right?
Okay, you got it.
Lance, Schmelk, Big Blue Kickoff Live every morning, 9:30 to 10:30 at Giants.com. See you tomorrow, everybody. Have a good one.
Have a good one.